Okay, babes, quick question. Have you ever been told to be more innovative at work, but also to hit your deadline, follow the process, and not make it weird? Yeah. Today, we're talking about innovation without the corporate headache. Hello, my peeps. Welcome back to Workday Playdate with Improve It. I'm Erin Deal, and this is the podcast where we talk about work, careers, and leadership in a way that actually helps you on a Monday morning or Wednesday, wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show. So this month on the pod, we are focused on early careers, first jobs, internships, that season where you're told to bring ideas, show initiative, and think creatively, but no one really explains how to do that without burning out or getting shut down. Today's episode, y'all, is especially for anyone who has ideas but doesn't want to deal with the corporate headache that can come with innovation. This conversation is called Innovation Without the Corporate Headache, and we're going to talk about whole brain. We're going to talk about just innovation in general and how to make it not a buzzword in your office. I'm so excited about today's guest. I'm joined by Rich Braden and Dr. Tessa Forshaw. Now, Rich is the founder of People Rocket, a strategic innovation firm based in San Francisco. He teaches design thinking and innovation at places like, I don't know, Harvard, Stanford, and London Business School. And he works with organizations including Google, Microsoft, Airbnb, the United Nations, and the Red Cross to help them innovate responsibly. Now, Tessa is a cognitive scientist and founding scholar of the Next Level Lab at Harvard University. She specializes in how people actually work, learn, and innovate, drawing from her background as a designer at IDEO and Accenture and her research in cognitive science. Now, together, they're going to bring this incredible mix of real-world innovation and how our brains actually function at work. Do you like how I did real-world innovation there for you? Real-world innovation. So I'm so excited for you to talk with our guests today. But before we jump in, I want to do a quick pause. Because if you're early in your career or you're leading early career talent, I want you to know about our Career 101 workshop at the company that I run called Improve It. Now, Improve It is an improv-infused talent development company for the new generation of work. This is Workday Playdate with Improve It. So let's improve it, shall we? Now, this workshop specifically is a two-hour high-energy experience and can be delivered in person for up to 100 people or virtually for up to 50 people on Zoom. Our seasoned improv facilitators will lead your participants through interactive activities and customized debriefs centered around one powerful idea. Positivity plus perseverance equals possibilities. Now, participants will learn how to use positivity in day-to-day tasks, do a good job even when no one is looking, and get the most out of their internship by leveraging connections, experience, and industry knowledge to move forward in their careers. Now, when I say internship, it could also be that they're an emerging leader or early career talent. So just know this workshop exists. It's here for you. And you can learn more at learntoimproveit.com. That's learntoimproveit.com. All right, let's get back to the play date. So let's talk quickly about this problem with innovation. Innovation. Every time I hear the word in a meeting, I'm just like, what about innovation? So it's like, well, what about synergy? Well, what about innovation? It's become this buzzword instead of a skill. Early career professionals are told to innovate, to think outside the box, and to bring new ideas, but they're also told to stay in their lane, hit deadlines, and follow the process. So people either stop sharing ideas or exhaust themselves trying to push change through systems that were never designed for it. And this is why talking with Rich and Tessa today is so important, because they help teams understand how innovation can actually happen inside real constraints, especially for people early in their careers. Now, here's the epiphany in all this. I call it the aha, ha-ha moment, right? Innovation, y'all, does not require permission. It requires understanding how people think, learn, and work. Now, research in cognitive science shows that innovation thrives when people feel psychological safety, clarity, and autonomy, not when they're under constant pressure and confusion. In fact, teams that create space for learning and experimentation consistently outperform teams that focus only on speed. So the solution is not asking people to be more creative. It's designing work in a way that supports creativity. And Rich and Tessa, this is exactly the intersection of their work. Let's get into today's playdate. Okay, Playdate. Rich, we're already laughing. I love it. Peeps, welcome to the Playdate. I have some friends here in the sandbox today, and I'm so freaking excited. We have Tessa and Rich here on the show. Welcome to Workday Playdate.
Thank you. It's great to be
here. Thanks for having us.
I love it when I have multiple guests because it's always like, who's going to, so I'll say, Tessa, Rich, we'll come to you with a question. But my first question is, and this is an important one, and Tessa, I'm going to come to you first. If you could set an intention for our time together, whether it's something you want to give or something you want to receive, what's one word that comes to mind for you?
I want to explore.
Oh, I love that word. Mm. Okay, Rich, how about you?
I have a compound word. Lower the bar.
Oh,
it's hyphenated.
I'm hyphenated. We'll take a hyphen. Lower the bar. Explore and lower the bar. I love it. Okay. And if you could, okay, this is kind of like y'all are going to have to yes and each other for this one because I need both of your answers. If you could have a dream location for this play date today, where would we be? Like, what is our dream location?
Mm-hmm. Can it be warmer than where I am right now?
Yeah, I know you're in Massachusetts. It's chilly.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb because I was just there with Tessa and say Melbourne, Australia, where it is warm and it's amazing. She introduced me to her city.
Oh. Yeah, let's be at a really funky coffee shop in Melbourne,
yes.
Australia.
Yes.
Funky coffee shop. Yes.
Having a Vegemite. Cheddar swirl.
Oh. I don't know what that is, but it sounds so good. I was like, oh.
It was delicious. Yeah.
Wait, so I didn't know you were with Tessa on this trip. Are you jet lagged, Rich? We were talking before we hit record, peeps.
I came back earlier, so okay. I am not jet lagged, but
okay.
Yeah, had a lovely time.
Oh my God, how freaking cool is that? Okay, pure curiosity. What's the travel time from Massachusetts to Melbourne, Australia? How long is that?
27 hours door to door we did it in, which is I think as fast as you can, but I deserve some epic brownie points because I did it with a 2.5-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Yeah, you win. Hey, Rich, you win. Mm-hmm. I have a 6-year-old, and if that seems like one of those two would be enough, and you had two, so okay. I'm giving you a lot of props. You get all the brownie points.
Thank you. Okay.
All the brownie points, but so freaking cool. All right, we're in this coffee shop. We're having this play date. And I want to talk to our peeps community. We have every level of career listening to this show, but I want to talk specifically to our early career peeps with this message. So when they hear the word innovation at work, what do you think early career professionals usually picture? And is that picture a part of the problem? Double-edged question. Rich, I'll go to you first. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, we kind of know an answer because we put out a survey to the general population in the U.S. and asked them questions about innovation. And one of them that was really surprising is, who are innovators? Thinking that they might all come back and say, oh, we are, and we're going to change the world. But predominantly, they didn't. It was like, I think over 90%, Tess, you can check me on that, but came back with one of 5 or 6 names that were you know, Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and Thomas Edison and Albert Einstein. And we were kind of shocked because it was not who are the people named the person. It was just who innovates. And we got those specific answers. And there's two tragic things. One, of course, they were all old white men like me. And that's just a wrong perception. There are so many amazing other innovators out there. And the second thing is that there's this mythology of who and where and what happens for innovation. And it's only in these certain places or it's only these certain people. And so I think I would want them to hear that they can innovate, that anyone, everyone has that capacity, that capability for being creative. There aren't special people, there aren't special places.
I love that. I love that. Okay, Tessa, do you have anything to add to that? A little yes and, if you will.
I'm always up for the yes and. I would say that one of the things that's really interesting as we have worked with students from master's programs, from undergraduate programs, from doctoral programs, from exec ed programs at Harvard and at Stanford, as well as Rich runs his own consulting firm in this space. And so we've done a lot of work with clients, with folks from the early to mid to senior career. And something we really commonly see is if we ask them, like, hands up if you think you're creative or you think you're an innovator, really only about at most 25% of the hands in the classroom or the boardroom or the workshop room will go up, which is kind of wild to me, like, especially the classroom side. We're talking about people who've opted in to a creativity and innovation class in a design school, and that's like still the amount of people. Or we're talking about, you know, leadership offsites of people at some of the most innovative companies in the world, and that's still the response. And so I think for young people who are in the early career, what I want to say to you is, like, don't follow the model. Like, just because the people above you aren't putting their hands up, just because you're hearing maybe them tell themselves things like, well, that's not how we do this here, so I'll keep my idea to myself, that doesn't mean that that's a practice you need to inherit. That's a bad habit. Don't do it.
Yeah. Okay, 25% is, that is not a statistic that I would have thought would
be. It's crazy.
That is wild. And they've opted in. They've opted in, yeah. And they don't believe it. Why do you think it's so low?
Well, I was just doing a workshop in Australia with a bunch of women who were sort of VP and above, and actually only 10% of hands in that room went up, which was like really catastrophic. So I paused the room and I was like, hang on, we're going to talk one by one. Why didn't you put your hand up? Like, let's really talk about this for a minute. And one of the most common things was, well, I wanted to see like if anyone else identified that way before I did. So I think there is this real like social, like, oh, if other people, like, what's everyone else going to do before I do? So they think about their ability to be creative or innovative in relation to other people's ability, not like as a human themselves in their own identity. And what was really interesting about that to me is that I've actually asked this question, and I think, Rich, you have too, right? Both of us with our various kindergartners in, like, you know, the parents' visit week where you run a workshop. And I asked that question, and I'm not kidding you when I say every kid in the class didn't just put up one hand. They like had both hands up.
Yes.
There were kids with like their leg up. There were kids like jumping, like they were bursting to tell how creative and innovative they were. And it's like just such a contrast. They didn't wait to see if anyone else did it or their relation, social relational sort of construct. They were in it, and the adults are like, how will everyone perceive me? My hand up, should I? Yes, no.
Okay, there's so many places I want to take this. And Rich, I'm coming to you. But I want to say, I have a six-year-old, okay? Do you know what he tells me he wants to be?
What?
An inventor.
Amazing.
And literally, like, he's six. And he believes, like, he's like, Mom, save all the toilet paper rolls for me because I'm going to invent some stuff. And so, like, why buy toys when you can just reuse toilet paper rolls, you know? My peeps, I hope you are enjoying the show. We'll be right back after a quick break from our sponsors. Thank you for supporting those who support the show. You're listening to Workday Playdate on the Passion Struck Network. Now back to our show. Okay, wait, so Rich, let's stay on this topic because this is fascinating.
Yeah.
And this just like plays into, because Rich, y'all, is an improviser and used to improvise Instagram with Bats Improv, which is like crazy good, okay, and crazy professional and awesome. So taking this into theory too, when I think about the work that innovation brings to organizations, when we say this word innovation, the work that you two are doing and have studied and have like the research and the cognitive science on, right? Let's just bring this into context, like on a micro scale. As children, we are like, let's play. We don't have to be told how to play. We don't have to be told that we can make something out of nothing. We are just, we have the ability to play. Why do we lose that? Why is this like not helping innovation in today's society? And why are we so reluctant to raise our hands figuratively, literally, emotionally, all the things?
Yeah, that question hits me really deeply because, as you said, I taught beginning improv classes for a dozen years, thousands of people. They all walk in the same shape. They don't have their hand up. They are terrified even walking in the door. Many of them have been told it would be good for them to go to a class like this, and they're afraid. But then hours or days later, they do the most incredible creative things in an improv class. And we see the same thing in our classes. These people that don't put their hands up, an hour and a half later, are creating a wall full of incredible ideas of building things that are just insane. So it's in there. It's been covered up. And I think a lot of it is covered up by the signals and the messages we are told going through school. Things shift from a kindergarten classroom with colors and bright things, and you could do anything, you could experiment and fail, and it doesn't matter, make mistakes and learn, to here's the right answers, here are the tests, and here are your scores. Now you have been rated and sorted and classified. And then it continues on, even in business school, with here are the right answers, here is the spreadsheet, and here is your reward and your raise based on the numbers.
Yes.
And we've kind of lost the humanity that from it all. And there's not enough arts classes as well, where the really sticky, uncertain questions, you know, like art is about how do you describe joy and grief and all these really human, difficult to grasp things are. Numbers are easy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not to diss on my finance and engineer people. I'm an engineer as well by trade. We need it all, but we've lost a huge thread of it, of how do we grapple with the unknown and the ambiguous and deal with that. And in doing so, we've classified ourselves into right and wrong. When the interesting questions are, what are the multitude of right answers to this interesting question? Mm-hmm. And there's lots of right answers as opposed to one.
I also think like, to that same sort of point, society has these like, so as a cognitive scientist, something I find really fascinating is how many like myths about our brain are out there that we deeply believe. And we talk about as if we're like, we know about the brain. And one of those is the idea that you are left-brained or right-brained. You are either analytical or creative. It's complete crap. Like there is absolutely no grounding in cognitive science for that.
And glad to hear it. Glad to hear that.
But like also think about that logically for a second as well. Like some of the most creative tasks in like when I often say to someone what's creative, they'll tell me like a composer or a choreographer. Okay, sure. There is absolutely a lot of creativity that goes into the creation of music, a novel piece of music or a novel piece of movement, but there's also a lot of analytics.
Yeah.
If you're a composer, you're dealing with different time paces and scores. You're dealing with beats and rhythm and different musical instruments and timing. You're dealing with, you know, predictive analytics essentially as well as you're conducting. Like there is so much involved in that process that is incredibly analytical. And at the same time, like engineering, Rich, you just said that is a very analytical thing, but actually like engineers have to be very creative. One of my favorite stories of this is it Apollo 11? Oh my gosh, I always get it
Apollo
wrong.
13.
Apollo 13. Thank you. Apollo 13 had the situation where the CO2 scrubber totally failed. And essentially, if they didn't replace it and scrub the CO2 from the capsule, the astronauts would die. And so they put all of the engineers on the ground in a room with what they had on the airplane, space capsule. And what they were able to do is come up with all of these random things that were there, come up with new versions of CO2 scrubbers. And actually, when I dove into this example that I've heard analytically a few times, what's really interesting is like they rapidly prototyped. They put together things that they would never have normally put together. And they didn't just come up with one alternative, they actually came up with a few things that could have worked. And like, that's incredibly creative.
Yes.
That process, yes. Right? So it doesn't make sense. And yet we tell this to people. And I think kids go through, as they socialize, and it's about 12 when they tend to lose their natural sort of creative whole body instinct, they sort of start to identify as either analytical or either creative. Mm-hmm. And like, it has to be one or the other.
True. You know what's great? Okay. I mean, and just even to yes and that, I live in Charleston, South Carolina. There are two public schools here that are, you can kind of like audition and also test into. They're public schools, okay? One is STEM, okay, academic magnet, and conjoined to that school, literally like you could walk across the campus and get to the next school. It's called School of the Arts. You go to one or the other. You can test into one or the other. You can't do both. And that just yes ands what you were saying to in even further detail. Because yeah. I will say, like, you know, Rich, as an improviser, right? Like there's so mm-hmm. much that you also can't control, but you have to be not only creative, but there's also analytical parts of like, when should I jump in this scene? Long form improv is literally like analyzing, like, what's the next best thing?
Yes.
To continue this scene and how could, and long form improv is a whole, we can talk all day about long form improv. All day. But like, there's so much to what you just said, Tessa, that makes me so happy because for so long, I feel like I've identified as a creative. And I use so many other parts of my brain analytically all day long as a business owner. When you know, so thank you for that liberation. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Rich, what were you going to say? Were you going to add to that?
I was going to add to that. I totally agree with you on the long form because there is the structure of the story, what makes sense to add in next. Yes. But then there is also what the connection and the characters and the empathy that are all going on at the same time. You need... and I've learned this through Tessa, you need both creativity and analytical at the same time to do all of the processing. We are whole brained. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see those schools merge to become a STEAM school. So arts is infused right along with it because that should be how we are educating our children to face. There's growing complexity all the time to face the problems that we are facing today. Any day you read the news, there is big, complex things that need big answers and solutions. And the kids are the ones that are going to do it. And we need to prepare them for it.
Okay. I just want our peeps to know when you said STEAM school, I did a full back body. Okay. I leaned back in my chair like I died. Okay. I am now dead and deceased and have risen. And that's number one. And number two, I love that you said whole brained. Like, yes, we can. I'm going to say that now. Thanks. I will quote both of you. Okay. I will send them the book and I will quote both of you and I will say, I am whole brained.
Perfect.
My maiden name was Holbrook. So now I'm whole brained. And that to me is the future I want for, because once these children go through our kids, Tessa, your kids, Rich, like who you gave the Waterloo, who you drank the Waterloo that your daughter didn't want for, like they are going to be the future. And so if we can instill that now, I freaking love this so much. And I want to take this from like a child seat to a now seat. When let's talk to the peeps listening who are thinking, okay, well, I've been leading my team of engineers all wrong. Or they're like, oh shit. okay, my creatives in my ad company, I've really not let them do anything with their analytical side lately. Like, what are some of the things that leaders could stop doing today to mitigate this problem?
I think one of the first things is it's about people, not about process. Mm-hmm. When we talk about creative solving, problem solving, design thinking, innovation, whatever flavor you happen to want to call it, we tend to think in terms of process because that feels safe and it feels secure and I can schedule and all those things. But that is down the wrong path. It is about the people. And otherwise, you're going to get compliance theater where you just go through and do the steps in order. And we've heard people say things like, we can't do this now. It's not the next step in the process.
Yeah.
And it's like, but what you got was terrible and doesn't add any value. You got to go redo it.
Yes.
Do the right thing, not the next thing. And so you need a more loose, not rigid structure. It's a lot more like improv. It's a lot more like jazz than classical music. It is a loose set of points to help keep the group moving together and vibing and jamming or grooving, if in the jazz context, and give them some freedom within that. So you can't just like give kindergartners a bag full of scissors and say, run around, right? You can't do that with your people as a leader and say, go freedom, do anything you want. You've got to be working collaboratively and together, which means a little bit of structure, but it has to be more loose. In fact, a colleague of ours, Keith Sawyer, wrote a book called Group Genius, studying both jazz music and improv in Chicago and how teams work together to tap into the collective intelligence and creativity that a team has, which is more than the sum of its parts.
Oh, so freaking good. Okay, we need the name of that book one more time. We'll link it in the show notes.
It's Group Genius.
Group Genius. Group Genius. Okay. Keith Sawyer, Group Genius.
He's amazing. And he's, I think, down your neck of the woods now, too,
Aaron. Oh, okay. All right, Keith. Come on to Charleston. Well, also, before, Tessa, I want you to add to that. I want to just say that I've never heard compliance theater used in a sentence, and it makes me so happy. I will forever use that again. You will be quoted, okay? But there's so many sound bites from the show. I'm just like, oh, they keep coming. The hits keep coming. Okay, Tessa, what do you think about that?
Yeah, so I mean, from a cognitive science lens, I think one of the things about creativity that's important to realize is that, you know, you need both the sort of analytical and typically creative concepts in creative problem solving. So an analogy that I often use is aerodynamics. So, you know, you have in creative problem solving, you need divergent thinking, which is often what we think of as like the hero in creative problem solving. It's coming up with many ideas. It's what's often studied in association with improv too, is this big divergent thinking, or which engages your default mode network, which is like daydreaming. If you've ever been on like a masseuse's chair and your like mind is wandering in this like weird kind of way and you solve the world, like that's your default mode network. So divergent thinking in aerodynamics is like lift. It's really exciting. It's what gets the airplane in the air. But like if all we do is get the airplane in the air, if all we do is divergently think, then like we don't go anywhere, right? Except up. For flight to be good, we need to also get back to the ground, I hope. And same is true in creative problem solving. So we need convergent thinking, which is often what people think of as a little bit more analytical. So that's making decisions, that's focusing, that's clustering things into themes, it's organizing, it's synthesizing, looking at all of the different options in front of you and choosing one or evaluating them based on a series of properties. And then just like in flight, that's, you know, what we would call weight or gravity coming back down to the ground. But you also need to move forward. You can't just go up and down and up and down and up and down. Like you need to move forward. So in an airplane, that's thrust, or in aerodynamics, that's thrust. But in creativity, we think about that as executive function. So the ability to plan and execute and follow through, to hold yourself accountable, to take steps, to move forward. So the reason I share this is because if you are managing a team and you've got a team that often thinks of themselves as analytical, or a team member who identifies as really creative but not really analytical, you can think about where in the creative problem solving process you plug them in at first based on what type of force you need at that moment, and that helps them get into it. So a way that I often see this play out is in brainstorming. You'll have people who are really comfortable with divergent thinking and they'll jump right in. But you'll have the person who sees themselves as, you know, oh, I'm analytical, and sort of standing back a bit. And so for that first time, instead of like trying to force them into something that they're uncomfortable with or not including them in the future, a really helpful strategy is to say, hey, you're really good at the, you know, the helping us go from really abstract to concrete and to make choices and, you know, to create decision-making frameworks. We've got all these ideas on the board. Could you help plug in at this moment? And then they step in and they start to participate. Next time, they've already now been in the brainstorming team, and it's much easier for them to step in with the divergent piece as well. So, and vice versa. So knowing how your team member maybe identifies is helpful, not in a way of limiting them to only that, but in a way of using that identity as an entrance into where you plug them in the creative problem solving process. So they're still involved and part of it, and ultimately, eventually can start to take on other parts of the thinking because they're cognitively capable of that.
So fascinating. Okay. I'm thinking I could take this conversation five different ways, but I'm going to land the plane, pun intended. I really did think, like, in this whole analogy, you really need all of those for an effective brainstorm. And the divergent, have you ever used Yes And? Let me ask both of you this. Have either of you ever used Yes And as a brainstorming tool?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So you know how it works, and you know it's mostly divergent thinking, right, in the beginning, because everybody's yes anding. But then you need those convergent. Did I say that right? Convergent. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm a good listener. You need those convergent people to come in and narrow down the themes so that you can actually take these pie in the sky ideas and bring them to life. And so, for our peeps listening, I'm just gonna share what this is really quick. So, like, if Rich, Tessa, and I we're planning a summer bash because we're cold today, okay? And we all threw out an idea. Can we just do a quick example of what this feels like? Okay, and we'll come up with food, location, entertainment for this. Y'all didn't know we were going to do a little improv, but this is just what happens sometimes. Okay, here we go. So we need ice cream. Yes, and Beyonce is going to perform at this event.
Oh, yes. And we're gonna rent out a huge stadium in the Bay Area so we can invite everyone in the Bay Area to come and join us.
Yes. And we're going to make it available on live stream for free so that the whole world can be part of the party.
Oh, yes. Oh, go ahead, Rich. Yes.
Yes. And we're going to bring together all of the Silicon Valley tech elite leaders and put the hardest problems in the world on stage in front of everyone so they have to solve them and come up with solutions.
Yes. And there's going to be a live chat stream in an app developed by these AI specialists where everybody is yes-anding each other to come up with these solutions.
Yes, yes. And it's a global event. We actually will get theaters and arenas around the world, 24 hours of global problem solving.
There we go. Okay.
Free ice cream the whole time.
Yes.
And free ice
cream is coming in. What kind of ice cream we getting, Tessa? What brand?
I don't know. It has to be like mint choc chip. I know that's divisive, but like.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, we'll get you some. We'll call Jenny's. Okay. Maybe Jenny's mint chocolate chip. I love a Jenny's ice cream. Okay. So that would be the divergent thinking. And then the convergent thinking would be, let's say, so like for me, and my team, we could do that all day, right? Like we could do that all day. Yep. But then we need sort of an operational type brain and more analytical brain to come in and say, okay, well, what were the themes that came up in this brainstorm? Technology, solving the world's problems, ice cream, Beyonce. And then that person would then use their strengths to narrow it down to a certain theme.
Yeah. Or they might cut another way you can be kind of convergent is they might create some kind of evaluation. So they might think about each idea in terms of its impact and its feasibility. They might, for example, put the idea that emerged from that around like, we're going to have stadiums all over the world and everyone have free ice cream. Those two ideas, like they might be high impact, but low feasibility, right? Yep. Like really, but really impactful. And there were some other ideas in there, I think, like, you know, just renting out the biggest arena that we could in the Bay Area. That seems like that would probably be medium impact, but really quite feasible, right? And so you can do that sort of analysis too. But that's so it's not just about convergence, isn't just about necessarily like narrow clustering. It's also about analyzing, I think is what I'm trying to say.
I get you. And I like the impact piece, like making sure that there is a proper impact. Rich, what were you going to say? Did you have something to add to it?
It can also be scaling. So saying, okay, global arenas, okay, that sounds nice, but it's a little outlandish. Well, but you said chat, I think. What if we have a global hackathon that's virtual? So now we get the global, we get the lots of different people participating, but it's feasible. The feasibility goes way up if it's an online engagement platform.
Yes.
So we can get most of it, but not all of it.
Well, and I like that you're giving the comfortability to the individual to come in as they are, and over time they can gain a little bit more. So we're getting the STEM to STEAM effect here, and over time they can participate in both sides because they've had more experience in both. But it's playing to the strengths first, is what I'm hearing. Is that yes? Okay, this is fun. Okay. This we're exploring, and I don't know if we're lowering the bar, Rich. Was that was the intention, lowering the bar?
Lowering the bar that nothing we've described requires a rocket science degree or you don't have to be a neurosurgeon to be able to do this stuff. It's all pretty doable by almost anybody. And I think it just takes a little bit of experimentation to try some of these things out. Do a brainstorming session like that. Filter and analyze what you've got. Like, you could do that in any meeting without making it a big innovation rollout.
Yeah.
Right? It's about everyday innovation and just incorporating a practice of doing these little changes and these small shifts.
I got a question around that. Do y'all have, so the practice we just did was perfect for us in our little moment. Cause we're using the improv, we're using the science approach, we're using your approach in terms of just what you're teaching on a regular basis. Somebody listening right now, a peep listening is like, okay, I don't know if I can bring ESN back to my team just yet. What is a small, tiny action they could do to instantly lower the friction in their organization around innovation? Is there something like that one tiny action you just mentioned, Rich? What could anybody anywhere do today, tomorrow, this week to lower that sort of, we need to innovate from the leadership top and put it into context for, okay, this is what you can do today for yourself, you, yourself, your career?
Well, I mean, I think two things come to mind for me. One is, you have to lean into the experiment. And the reason we don't lean into the experiment is fear of failure. And in improv, we know how to deal with failure. Because if you reframe failure to be taking risks and celebrating those risks, the risk is not like an existential risk. It's not like the company's going to end if you try to do a yes and in a meeting. It just might not work. Maybe slight embarrassment, but with many of these things, just getting past that fear of failure and as a leader, taking a step farther and creating an environment around it, like an improv, where you celebrate the risk-taking, you celebrate the failure and say, hey, Jody just tried this out and it didn't work at all, but here's what she learned. Jody, take it away and share that. The failure and the risk-taking is not about failing and risking. There's so much talk in the innovation creative space about fail first and fail forward, and nobody's trying to fail. They're trying to do something that hasn't been done. And so making it okay to do that if, and this is a critical piece, if you are learning from it. if it helps you to take that next move. So to lower the bar, to try any of these things, to try a little yes and in a meeting, all you have to do is when someone says something, say yes and finish your sentence. You don't have to announce it. You don't have to create it as a thing. It doesn't have to be a meeting thing. You can personally just change how you operate and it will change the environment around you.
Ooh! Okay, Tessa, wait, I got to say one thing and then I'm coming to you. In improv, we say no mistakes, only gifts. And I'm just like, chef's kiss, had to throw that in there because yes, I believe, I'm a believer all day.
Yes.
Okay, got the t-shirt. Tessa, what do you have to say? What's one tiny thing? Or you could just yes and rich, whatever feels right.
I am yes ending rich. Yes, and how you show up is the biggest thing that you can control. And what we know from the cognitive science is that a lot of these kinds of habits of mind or mindsets is another one that I'll talk about in a second. A lot of these types of things are actually best taught by having them modeled. So if people around you are doing them, then you are more likely to do them. So if you want other people around you to start doing them yourself is the best way that you can do that. And sort of naming what you're doing. And it doesn't have to be a big deal. So in innovation, we think mindset is a really important part of how you go about innovation. So mindsets are essentially, if you think about like rose-colored glasses, like I would say that's a mindset, right? That's a mindset by which you see the world, everything's a bit pink, it's all, you know, rosy and happy. And so what you notice, what you pay attention to, how you interpret those things and the choices and decisions that you make are different than if you were wearing them. Or like if I go to Costco with my husband, we often walk in with different mindsets, which causes a lot of friction. So my mindset is like get in and out. And his mindset is like, oh my gosh, there's going to be so many fun things to try today.
He's a squatter. He's a squatter. Right. He's a doodler and a squatter. Okay, I know those types. That's my husband too. Okay, keep going. Yeah.
So if your mindset is go in and out, you're like the choice you make, you're going to go in, you're going to only notice the things that you want to notice to. You're going to go along your route that you would normally go to and get what you need and get out there. If you're him, you're going to go in, you're going to wander around and see what's new. The decisions you make around where to turn and what to go to might be different. What ends up in your trolley might be different. How much time you spend there might be different. Like see how your mindset can completely change the experience. So in creativity, that's true as well. If you're trying to solve a problem and you go in with a mindset that is like, all right, we're coming up with this we're facing this problem, I am going to go in with a mindset of abundance. We're going to come up with every single possible idea that we can. That's the mindset I'm wearing today, team. Can you help me? Let's just all wear it for 10 minutes. What are all of the different ways we could solve this? Let's come up with them. And so helping sort of that practice of mindset, putting on a mindset can be really helpful and something you can control and articulate to your team and influence sort of their behavior and decision making slowly, but intentionally.
Yeah. Oh, I love. Okay, listen. I have learned the power of mindset myself over the past. Like being an entrepreneur will truly test all of your like holes and shadows and dark spots, and so you have to like work really truthfully. Like I think any business leader or any leader, parent in general, listening to this show, you are tested every day. And so mindset has become my lifeline. Thank you, God. You know, like I had to get through some tumbleweeds in there before I could actually get some good stuff out. But truly, that is the one thing we can control is our attitude and our efforts. So I love starting there, just starting with that small step. Y'all, I could literally talk to you forever. Rich, do you want to add anything to that?
I do. One thing, you just said small steps. When I said that, I gave you a concrete example of a thing you could go do. But that is one, what we would call a move. It's one small, discrete action that you can go out and do. And many people think you got to go out and get a certificate or go take a class or do a thing to do innovation. And that is 100% off. We're all full of moves, of little mental models, of formulas, of ways of thinking that we use, whatever our background, whether we went to the STEM school or we went to the art school, we're full of them and we call them moves. And you can find moves and innovation moves and special things all over the internet and in books. And you can make all of them your own. You don't have to do it the way they said, the way other people do it. A good friend of mine wrote a book on improv games, and he made the definitions very tiny so that people had to figure out how they wanted to play it, because there's so many ways to play each one that are great that one way isn't enough. So you can go and take stuff from all over any methodology and just try it out. And if it doesn't work, you change it. And if it doesn't work again, you leave it behind. You can just keep going with that experimentation, really lean into that. And it's only a short thing. So if you mess up a couple moves, who really cares? The impact isn't that big. If you try to launch an innovation program, it's this big deal that you've got to try to prop up and make okay. And that's the hard way. That's the way that we see doesn't work for a lot of people. So just change you, yourself, your practice with small moves, changing your mindset every day.
I love it. Because tiny actions lead to big results. We all know that. And y'all are so freaking awesome. Like, I could legit talk to you for 2 more hours, but I'm just going to tell the peeps that they need to come find you in other places. So where can they find you in all the other places?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can go to innovationish.com. That's the website that houses our book, Innovation-ish, How Anyone Can Create Breakthrough Solutions to Real Problems in the Real World. And it's a pretty practical book with a lot of cognitive science that they can do. And we publish on a lot of articles and insights and cartoons on LinkedIn. So they can come and see that. And wonderful podcasts like yours.
Oh my gosh. Okay. And if you'll drop all the links, we can find the book anywhere. Amazon, anywhere books are sold. Okay.
Well, come to my house. I got one right here for you.
Go to Rich's house. Anywhere. You go to the Bay Area. You can see Tessa in Massachusetts or in Australia. And then, okay, I really feel like we explored today, y'all. I feel like we explored. We lowered the bar, which now I love. We defined that. And I have one final question. How are you going to make today at work more playful? Tessa, how about you?
I've already been pretty playful today, actually. I was getting really frustrated with some data analysis. And so I decided to turn all these little pieces of data into post-it notes and to visualize how I felt I made a tree at one point, but visualize the different ways that the data made sense to me to see if I could come up with metaphors for what it was telling me. I'm a researcher for people who've missed that. So I deal with data, human data all the time. And sometimes just staring at it as in little boxes, drives me crazy and it doesn't help me make sense of it. So that was how I was playful today.
That's so fun. You're using both sides, your whole brain right there. That was a whole brain moment.
Both sides of my brain. That's right. Yep.
Rich, how about you?
I have a longtime client who called me yesterday and said, we're doing some learning, some micro learning, and we're thinking about exploring AI avatars. Can you help us experiment and prototype with that? And I was like, yes, I can. So I'm going to try to play with some different avatars and maybe make a version of me and make some other people and just play with that today. And so I'm really excited. That is my engineer and my artist together.
Whole brain. We need to change the name of this episode to whole brain. Use your whole brain. No, listen, both of you are so fantastic. I'm so grateful you're doing the work that you're doing. It just lends itself so well to what we talk about here on this show. And so check out Rich and Tessa, visit their links in the show notes. Thank y'all so much for playing. I loved being in this coffee shop in Melbourne, Australia with you. It was so fun.
It was so fun.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay, peeps, as we wrap, here's what I want to leave you with. Innovation is not about having the biggest idea or the loudest voice. It's about curiosity, clarity, and courage to try small things. Thank you so much to our guests, Rich and Tessa, for making innovation feel accessible and human, especially for people early in their careers. And now, peeps, it's time for the playdate practice. Now, this is something I want you to put into practice this week. This week, I want you to notice one small friction point in your work, something that slows you down, confuses you, or feels inefficient. Write it down, okay? All you have to do, write it down and ask one curious question about it, okay? So maybe, for example, you're feeling some friction with how things are going in your marketing, okay? And so you're like, okay, this process is not working. I'm going to write it down. Ask a question, what could we do differently? And here's the final step. Suggest one small experiment to improve it, pun intended. You don't need permission to be thoughtful. I want you to be curious, stay creative, and until next time, keep playing, keep learning, and keep building a career that you actually enjoy. I'll see you next time.